From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Nikolai Mladenov, UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process. Mr. Mladenov is also the personal representative to the PLO and the Palestinian Authority of UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, and serves as the envoy of the Secretary General to the Quartet. And we're coming to you from his office on the sidelines of the 70th UN General Assembly here in New York City. A Bulgarian diplomat with extensive experience in public service in both Bulgaria and at the United Nations, Mr. Mladenov succeeds Robert Seri of the Netherlands as UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process. Previously, Mr. Mladenov was UN Special Representative for Iraq and head of the UN Assistance Mission for Iraq. Prior to that, he served respectively as Bulgaria's Minister of Defense and Minister of Foreign Affairs. We'll talk with Nikolai Mladenov about the status of the Middle East peace process in the wake of the announcement by Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, also known as Abu Mazen, that the Palestinians no longer regard themselves as bound by the Oslo Peace Accords signed with Israel in 1995, and as the conflict in Syria and Iraq begin to overshadow the Israeli-Palestinian issue on the world stage. Nikolai Mladenov, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Carol.
Well, Mr. Mladenov, what is your understanding of President Mahmoud Abbas's recent announcement that the Palestinians are no longer bound to mutual agreements with Israel, including the Oslo Peace Accords, which created the foundation for Middle East peace?
I think this is a very important alarm bell ringing, and I hope that the world hears it. When the president of the Palestinian Authority came to the United Nations and said very clearly that message, I think we all need to understand that we have collectively, as an international community, failed in supporting a peace process that should have by now long delivered a state for the Palestinian people and security for Israel. I think we need to look at what happens from this point forward very carefully. Abu Mazen's speech at the UN creates a bit of a watershed between the period until now and the future. And I hope in the next few weeks we will see intensive efforts to really focus on what policies need to change on the ground in the West Bank and Gaza that can facilitate the return to meaningful negotiations between the two parties. This is one of our focuses right now as the United Nations and with our partners in the Quartet, the US, Russia, and the European Union, to look at exactly what needs to change on the ground in order to rebuild trust. Secondly, we need to look at the region. The Palestinian-Israeli conflict can no longer be considered in isolation from everything else that is happening in the Middle East. In one way or another, it will be influenced. Either the radicalism, the extremism that is rising across the region will influence the parties on the ground, or something will happen in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that will further ignite tension around the region. Therefore, we need not just to look at what the two sides need to do in order to have a credible environment in which to negotiate, but we need to look at what is the regional context and how do we bring in the Middle East back into the Middle East peace process, so that the Arab countries of the region feel engaged in the future of resolving this. So we're at a turning point.
I do want to pursue your notion that this is an alarm bell and that this is a real turning point. But first, before we do that, will we see tangible actions on the ground by the Palestinians as a result of Abu Mazen's announcement that he feels that the Palestinians are no longer bound? What does that mean concretely?
What I believe it means is that it is a desperate call to Israel to also move forward on a change of policies that are consistent with prior agreements. I don't think we should expect sort of the immediate dissolution of the Palestinian Authority or chaos in any respect. I think that this call has to be heard. And I'm very glad in a way that the day that Abu Mazen made that speech in the United Nations, we had a very important meeting of the Middle East Quartet in which we invited not just our Arab partners, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, a number of other countries from Europe and other parts of the world joined. And the statement which came out of our meeting is a very strong call for policies on the ground to change, for the region to re-engage with the process and help rebuild confidence that is necessary. I think Abu Mazen has been president of Palestine for, a decade now. He needs to be able to deliver to his people, and he needs to be able to show to his people that the policies of nonviolence, of negotiations, are delivering to their benefit. And we have all a vested interest in helping him deliver on that promise. Otherwise, the alternative is not very pretty. The alternative will be violence, it will be radicalization, and that would certainly not be in the interest of Israelis or Palestinians alike.
Briefly, let's talk about your particular role as UN coordinator for the Middle East peace process. You are normally based in Jerusalem. What is your specific role and goal? How do you coordinate among the various players, both the parties to the conflict as well as the quartet?
My position is rather unique within the UN system because most of my colleagues, whether they work on Iraq, Afghanistan or anything else, they have a specific UN Security Council resolution that defines their mandate. My post doesn't have that specific Security Council resolution, but it has three hats, if you wish. One hat is the peace process hat, and this is where we in the UN try and facilitate discussion and agreement between the Palestinians and the Israelis with the goal of achieving a two-state solution. This is all the work that we do in facilitating political dialogue, our work with our quartet partners. But there's another hat as well, and that hat is the representation of the Secretary General to the Palestinian Authority. Under that hat, we have a lot of efforts that the UN is doing through our country team to support the institutions of Palestine, helping build up all the necessary development agendas and others that one needs to see in place in order to have a fully functioning state in the future. And unfortunately, if one looks at the lack of a political process currently, that is also affecting the institutional side and the services that the Palestinian institutions are able to provide to their people. And the third hat is the relationship that the UN has with the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO. And under that hat, we have a very substantial focus on supporting intra-Palestinian unity. Because if one looks at the challenges to resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you can make a list of who needs to do what, but at least one item somewhere at the top of that agenda would be the unity of the Palestinian movement. It is inconceivable that you can have a peace agreement until one part of the Palestinian state is under the control of an entity that is outside of the hands of government, Hamas. Therefore, we need to work a lot on helping rebuild that unity, but to rebuild it, not just for the sake of unity, but to rebuild it on a set of principles that are constructive for the future engagement in a negotiated two-state solution. So my job is quite impossible.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
We're back with UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process, Nikolai Mladenov. Well, Mr. Mladenov, let me pick up where we left off on the need for Palestinian unity. Do you see any movement toward unity between the Palestinian Authority-controlled West Bank and the Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip?
I can't give you a very optimistic answer to that question. I can't see that I see much hope in the immediate future. What I do see, however, is what we believe should happen and the efforts that we and others are undertaking to make it happen. I hope we succeed because it is not just a political question of unity, of principles, of elections. It is, in fact, about the daily lives of people. In Gaza today, after the destruction that was caused by the last conflict, and despite the reconstruction which is now taking place, we have about 40,000 public servants who have not received salaries for over a year. And this is causing immense social pressure within an environment that is already very tense in itself. 40,000 people, most of them are doctors, most of them are teachers, have not been paid. And what I believe very firmly is that if we don't start addressing issues like that, resolving public sector salaries in Gaza, returning the Palestinian Authority back to its legitimate role, controlling the crossings with Israel in Gaza, we will not be able to address the broader issues related to reconciliation. And we will not be able to address them because if one focuses on these issues, whether it's salaries, whether it's crossings, whether it's social issues related to people's lives, one has the ability to build up a constituency for peace within Gaza. People there are very angry. I go there quite often. We meet with all segments of society. And I assure you that the tension that is rising within Gaza is extremely dangerous. The rockets that continue to be fired into Israel, although less now than before, are a continuing trend. And there's an increasing rise of Salafi and other radical Islamic groups taking a foothold in Gaza. So we really need to see how to bring down the social tension in order to be able to point out the way for a political process forward. Now, in no way can that political process be anything else except based on the principles of peaceful negotiations, of a two-state solution, of recognition of the previous agreements that have been signed by the PLO and Israel. But to get there is a very tough process. A very important role in this respect is played by Egypt. Egypt has the leadership perhaps in the Arab world on the issue of Palestinian reconciliation and work very closely with the Egyptian authorities. We've consulted intensely with the other Arab partners who have a stake in this and who can help bring moderation. Because you see, even if you look beyond Gaza, as I said earlier, the stuff that is happening in the Middle East right now, the radicalization, the ethnic religious tension, the sectarianism, will inevitably affect the situation on the ground. And it is most likely, in the context of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, for this infection to come through Gaza. Therefore, everything that we can do to protect people from it will be to the benefit of the security of both Israel and Palestine.
You said in a recent speech at the UN Security Council that, quote, a comprehensive approach must be advanced, consisting of bold, concrete actions on the ground, in the region, and internationally. It will necessitate significant policy shifts by Israel, as well as an unflinching commitment on the Palestinian side to achieve genuine national unity. Well, we talked about that and the obstacles toward national unity. What about on the Israeli side? What specific policy shifts do you recommend?
You see, Carol, the key in that sentence is bold and concrete. We're way past the time of symbolic gestures. The Israelis and the Palestinians have unfortunately drifted apart over the years. Societies have drifted apart. Political leaders don't talk to each other. The peace process has effectively been put on hold. So you cannot repair that environment with just symbolic gestures. What we need is bold and concrete policy changes. And these policy changes can be, leaving Gaza aside for a second, just look at the West Bank. We have, over the last few months and years, we have a rising trend of demolition of Palestinian houses and buildings for various reasons. We have more demolitions today than we've had over the last few years. We have continuing settlement construction. We have policies that need to change in order for Palestinian communities to be able to grow. There are over 100 Palestinian villages that are waiting for years now to have their master plans for development approved. Now that would be a significant step forward, approving those master plans. Moving forward on a multitude of projects that have been put in place over the years for industrial zones, that would create jobs, that would help people have livelihoods. Creating opportunities to access the natural resources of the region. Last but not least, also moving forward on increasing the Palestinian security control of certain areas. Now, none of this should come at the expense of Israel's security and the security of both the Israeli and the Palestinian people, because it's quite intertwined. But it would actually give hope to people that at the end of this process, it is not just jobs that are at stake, but that there is a political perspective, there is a political horizon. And this is what we're arguing both through what we do at the United Nations and what we do with our partners in the Quartet. You have to take bold, specific, concrete steps that empower communities. This is what can save the peace process right now. And once you do that, if you are able to set up the regional context in which the neighbors, the Arab countries, support such a process, if you're able to put together the international infrastructure here at the United Nations that supports this process, yes, you can see the parties returning back to negotiations quite easily and in a meaningful manner.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Nikolai Mladenov, a distinguished Bulgarian diplomat who is currently the UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process. I'm Carol Castiel. We're coming to you from United Nations headquarters in New York City. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. You can send an email as well to pcusa@voanews.com. Either way, tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Zion Ipianada from Bori Rivers, Nigeria. Well, back to you, Mr. Mladenov. You know, you hear sometimes Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu say he doesn't have a partner for peace. He continues to criticize Abu Mazen, President Mahmoud Abbas. It seems like we're in a stalemate. And he's also very obsessed, and rightly so, with Iran. He's not happy with the nuclear deal that was struck with Iran. On the other hand, many say that, particularly in Israeli security establishment circles, that the deal is not negative for Israel. However, the question is, we hear that there are other voices in Israel echoing what you're saying. They're saying that Israel must make bold moves. I heard, for example, opposition politician Yair Lapid in New York criticizing his own country, that is Israel, for not responding to the Saudi-led Arab Peace Initiative. He says if he were elected, and he's predicting that Israel may have elections next year, early elections, that he would respond positively, saying, of course, as I said, that Israel cannot remain both a Jewish and democratic state without resolving this conflict, without putting an end to the conflict and arriving at a two-state solution. Do you hear these voices in Israel as well, being based in Jerusalem? And do you see any movement? Because right now, the concern is that with Benjamin Netanyahu at the helm, we may remain in this stalemate situation, and a year is a long time, and things could really deteriorate.
Yes, we do. We hear all these voices on a daily basis in Jerusalem. Most recently, I had a meeting with a senior Labour Party member of the Knesset who had worked for months to develop a vision for peace in the Middle East, which he is now promoting potentially to be the platform of his own party for this issue. So there is a very lively debate, both actually in Israel and among the Palestinians. There are people who say, well, maybe we should look at what a one-state solution actually implies. And it's a very painful discussion for some, because a one-state solution would actually imply all people in that country would have equal rights and equal obligations in a vote and citizenship, etc. But for some, for the vast majority of Israelis, that would undermine the Jewish character of their country. For the Palestinians, it wouldn't create the Palestinian state that they want to have for themselves. So it's a very, very, very different opinions. But going back to your point about Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Abbas, you know, in a way, they both have a point. Prime Minister of Israel is very concerned, rightly so, with the security of his country, given the situation in the Middle East, given particularly the presence of Hezbollah and Lebanon and the whole environment in the region. But President Abbas also has a point that for, you know, all the years that he has developed and promoted the idea that you can move forward towards peace through a negotiated, a non-violent track, he has to be able to go back to show something to his own people. I just wish, and I say this not as a UN diplomat, but as a politician from my own country, that I really do wish that leaders would stop talking so much only to their own constituencies and would actually turn to look at the constituents of the others and try and build broader consensus. So what we need to say to both leaders now, speeches at the UN are great. They're very important. They send political messages. But how about we get beyond those speeches? How about we look at what is it that specifically you are ready to do on the ground to change policies that help Palestinian communities develop and to bring about unity for the Israelis and for the Palestinian leadership. Because this conflict has been going on for far too long. It has drained society. It has become so much ingrained, if you wish, in the architecture of global politics that people just take it for granted these days. And looking at Syria, looking at Iraq, at Yemen, at rising threat of radicalism, all of this, people have less and less time for this process. And that's very, very dangerous. So I do hope that what we are able through our engagement to do is to say to both leaders and among Israeli leaders and Palestinian leaders, you know what, great speeches at the UN, but please show us what you're ready to do on the ground to reaffirm your commitment to a two-state solution. Don't just say it, just do it.
Well, exactly. But the problem is, especially coming from Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as Mahmoud Abbas, they seem to be dug into their positions. And it's just important to get a sense of what is going on behind the scenes. For example, this opposition leader, Yair Lapid, who would like to become prime minister perhaps in a new election, is saying that he would take the Arab Peace Initiative based on Land for Peace, take it seriously as Israel hasn't in the past, and make a response, because this is a generous thing if it could be implemented. It could end the conflict between Israel and its Arab neighbors. And he's saying two things. One, that in a sense, given what's going on in the region, the terrible conflict in Syria, the Iran deal, which makes the Sunni Arab states nervous, as well as Israel, because of a potential windfall when sanctions relief hits Iran, and the fact that perhaps some of that money could be used for nefarious purposes, supporting some terrorist groups. For that reason, as well as just the need to have peace, that, you know, the Israelis and the Arabs have a lot more in common now as a result of the Iran deal and the conflict in the region. Do you see these regional configurations as perhaps catapulting or at least incentivizing the parties, even the likes of Benjamin Netanyahu and Abu Mazen, who are currently at the helms of their respective states, as pushing them in a direction of compromise?
Everything that's happening in the region, it's like Iran deal with radicalism, with rise of ISIL. You know, the chips are still in the air, and I don't think anyone knows where they'll fall. These are global shifts. I mean, what we're seeing today is not just governments changing and policies realigning in the Middle East. We're talking about massive tectonic shifts in the region. So clearly that will create new opportunities. It will create new dangers, as we've seen today, but it will also create new opportunities. And perhaps the one opportunity that still has not been used, this is the Arab Peace Initiative. It's been on the table for more than 10 years. How the world looked in 2003, and think of how the world looks today in 2015. It remains still the best sort of, if you wish, vision for peace in the region. But it is also an opportunity to develop a regional security framework between parties that in 2003, in 93, and in 83 would have seemed completely impossible because of these realignments in the region. So I do hope that, you know, when we look and we talk about the context of the Arab neighbors of Israel, that there is that growing understanding. However, and this is a very big however, none of this can happen unless there is progress on the Palestinian file. This is the simple, basic political reality of the Middle East. And it is rightly for that to be so. One cannot imagine that unless there are substantial policy changes on the ground towards Palestinians, unless there's a political prospect for reviving the negotiated two-state solution, that any of these initiatives in terms of reconciliation or, you know, broader outreach with Arab countries will really take off the ground. Inevitably, they should, because that is in the interest of everybody. We're seeing, you know, the situation in Syria, how it is affecting everybody, not just with the rise of Daesh, but with the migration crisis that has caused in Europe. We're seeing Arab countries from the Gulf actively concerned about what is happening in Iraq, for example, or, you know, the Saudi operations in Yemen. So there is clearly an interest to look at a new arrangement in terms of security. But let's not put the cart before the horse. There's no question Israel is a democratic country, and there are different alternatives, different options, different debates, whether it's Lapid, whether it's other political parties. They have to come forward with their views and debate them publicly more intensely. Maybe it's my political bias, but I look very carefully at the platforms of political parties before the last Israeli election. You know what? There's very little, if any, mention of a peace process or of the Palestinian issue at all. And that's sad, because this is a core issue for the security of both Israelis and the Palestinians. And yes, let's look at different alternatives. Let's look at different ideas which parties develop.
No question about it. It's a core issue, but it has been overshadowed by the obsession with Iran and the Iran deal, different people interpreting the impact of the nuclear deal with Iran. But as I said, based on what I heard, at least from this one opposition politician, he is saying, in fact, that because of the Iran deal and sanctions relief, that now there's even a greater convergence of interest between Israel and some of the Sunni Arab states in collaborating much more intensively to combat nefarious interests on the part of Iran. And at the same time, that could propel them to work more closely on solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But as you said, it still requires that both parties, that is the Israelis and Palestinians, that does not absolve them of their bilateral talks. And in that regard, one more question. Given these terrible crises around the region, whether it's Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and of course the refugee crisis flowing primarily from Syria, Mr. Mladenov, what are the prospects for addressing the Israeli-Palestinian conflict given these crises? Do they tend to overshadow, or do you think there's a way to discuss it and move forward, notwithstanding these other challenges, or perhaps because of these other challenges?
I think it's very easy to say that they overshadow, and that's a very easy excuse way out to say, well, we can't deal with this now because we've got all these other things to do. But in fact, we need to turn this around and we need to look at what opportunities for resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict this regional environment today creates. And it does create opportunities as well, because it does show to people that there is a greater threat out there. And this greater threat is radicalization and the sweeping rise of whether it's ISIL or the whole idea of religious sectarian based organizations. This is a real threat. Maybe a couple of years you could say, well, it's a threat in the Muslim world, it's a threat in the Middle East. Well, it's now a threat in Europe. Now, how long are we going to sit around and wait to address this? And this feeds into the conflict of Israel and Palestine. And the Israeli-Palestinian conflict feeds into that. Over the last few weeks, we saw the rising tension at the holy sites in Jerusalem. And if you compare the thousands of people that were killed in Iraq after the attack about a decade ago on the Shia religious shrines in Samarra, thousands of people were killed in a day. Mosques were destroyed, and it was really religious violence across the country. You compare it to the violence in the holy sites of Jerusalem, where nobody was killed. People were arrested, hurt, there was violence. But the reverberations of what happened in Jerusalem went around the world in minutes. The emotional charged place that it is, it really affected everybody. It affected everybody in Israel, it affected everybody in the Arab world. So it is extremely, extremely dangerous. And I hope that the next steps, if you wish, what we need to do as the international community today is to understand that the game has changed, it's very different. And we need to recognize the core problem of the region today, which is the rising of radicalism and sectarianism, and try and resolve this conflict before it gets infected. Because once it gets infected, it'll be extremely dangerous for everybody. I hate to be saying this, but I remember that my first report on Iraq in the UN Security Council sometime in 2013, it started with the fact that, you know, there was this organization called ISIL that is rising in Iraq and in Syria, and that is trying to erase the borders between the two countries. Today, 2015, when people would note the organization, and now we've got it in control of a large territory in these two countries. So situation is changing very, very rapidly, and none of the leaders, not the Israelis, not the Palestinians, can afford to think that they can sit this out.
Well, as we conclude, Nikolai Mladenov, we hear often that the United States is an indispensable partner in this negotiation, but we saw, unfortunately, a valiant attempt on the part of the Obama administration through Secretary of State John Kerry, you know, to bring the parties together. He tried for over a year, and unfortunately, this fell apart.
It is vital to the process. It provides, to a large extent, the credibility of any future political deal that would lead to a two-state solution. You can perhaps make the argument that it is not enough just American engagement on this issue, and this is why you have the quartet, where you have the European Union, the Russians, and the UN involved, but it remains vital. And notwithstanding American domestic politics, elections, you know, administrations will change, the US will have to stay engaged in this issue. Perhaps it needs to look at how it defines its role in different periods. But perhaps now, really, the role of the US and the other partners is to support the sides on the ground to move on the policies that need to change to make a negotiation meaningful, to work with the region to build up the context that we were discussing earlier, whether it's through the Arab Peace Initiative or through a broader security framework.
Nikolai Mladenov is a distinguished Bulgarian diplomat who is currently the UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East peace process. Thank you so much for your time. Terrific insights. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in New York City and Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Cameron Taheri Moradam. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.